The Scientific Research Film Service presents... The D'Orsay Linear Accelerator. To explore the structure of the atomic nucleus and study the properties of elementary particles, modern physics needs increasingly powerful accelerators. There are different types of accelerators defined either by the particles involved, protons or electrons, or by the method of acceleration, circular or linear. The linear accelerator produces a highly parallel beam of electrons, which, because of their precise definition, constitute an excellent probe. The current is generally much higher than in a circular accelerator, and the electrons are easily extracted in a clearly defined beam. Finally, each electron strikes the target only once, which makes possible a precise count of the number of electrons passing through it. The process of linear acceleration involves the submission of the particles to an electric field whose wave velocity corresponds to their own. The wave is represented by a curve which materializes the variations of the electric field. On the time scale, this sinusoidal distribution appears to move at a specific velocity. Let us suppose that the charged particles move at a velocity very close to that of the wave. Certain particles are subject to no field force. They maintain the same velocity as that of the wave. Others are subject to a field which accelerates them. The remainder to a field which retards them. While the latter are progressively lost, the others, constantly accelerated, are grouped in a bunch centered on the crest of a particular wave. What, then, is the general structure of an accelerator? A source of high-frequency energy? A structure to guide this energy? A source of electrons? A focused magnetic field to prevent the beam from scattering. Finally, a vacuum chamber with its pumping mechanism and systems for operation, control, and security. Radiation protection is provided by thick concrete walls. This is the basic structure of the D'Orsay linear accelerator. The 130 meters of the accelerator waveguide are divided into 22 sections of about 6 meters each. When the electrons enter the waveguide, they must have a specific velocity. The electrons are discharged from an electron gun, which comprises a directly heated tungsten cathode, an anode, and an electrode for focusing. The electrons are focused into a converging beam which enters the buncher, the first element of the waveguide. An axial magnetic field keeps the beam from diverging under the mutually repulsive force of the electrons. In the guide itself, the electrons are carried by the high frequency wave. To achieve this, the wave must have a phase velocity equal to that of the electrons. This velocity is obtained by giving to the guide in which the wave is propagated an appropriate periodic structure. Thus, it is composed of a succession of copper cells of high electric conductivity. These are coupled one to another by central holes called irises. Each cell constitutes a resonant, self-capacitating circuit. On the one hand, the values of the self-induction coil and of the capacity determine the frequency of resonance. On the other hand, the length of the cells determines the phase velocity of the wave. A small piston passes through the wall of each cell. This makes it possible to adjust the frequency of resonance. The parts are connected section by section to rods which assure their rigorously exact alignment. Each section is equipped with a high-frequency head. It is through this head that the electromagnetic energy is introduced. The vacuum is maintained by regularly spaced pumps. The precise alignment of the waveguide in its trench is assured by adjustable jacks. The high tension current comes from special electronic tubes known as klystrons, located on the upper level. These klystrons are similar to those used in radar installations. One klystron, called the pilot, provides an oscillating wave of sharply defined frequency. This wave is amplified by 22 other klystrons, each feeding its respective section. Each klystron has its own source of current, the modulator. 50 times per second, this gives a very brief burst of current under a tension of 270 kilovolts. A huge quantity of energy is required for the burst. This comes from condensers associated with the self-induction coils. The condensers are discharged abruptly into a transformer across a spark gap. After each impulse, the condensers are quickly recharged. This is a sectional view of a klystron. The gun emits a beam of electrons at high velocity which a magnetic field maintains in the axis of the klystron. A high-frequency signal modulates the beam. The electrons, grouped in a bunch, yield their energy at the exit cell. The assembling of the klystron is carried out by the brazing of its copper elements and is terminated by sealing with an argon arc. Gas is removed from the klystron by prolonged heating at 450 degrees centigrade. The operation continues to enable it to function under maximum tension. The first models of klystrons for accelerators provided power peaks of 5 and 10 megawatts and an average power of a few kilowatts. Klystrons now being produced supply peaks of as high as 30 megawatts and an average of 30 kilowatts. The Dorsey accelerator is now being extended. The plan is to prolong the waveguide by about 100 meters, which will raise its maximum energy to 2,300 million electron volts. In its present state, it can accelerate electrons up to an energy of 1,300 million electron volts. The accelerated electrons can be led into a collision ring. In addition, several zones of acceleration to lower energies are provided for. The electrons are directed toward the corresponding experimental halls by systems of deflection. Magnets to deflect the electrons are basic elements in these systems. The first magnet, with a uniform magnetic field, deflects the electrons by 30 degrees. Its role is analogous to that of the optical prism. Like the prism, it deflects the beam, thus producing a considerable dispersion. Electrons whose energies vary somewhat are accordingly deflected more or less. Slits make it possible to select one energy band in the same manner as one selects a wave band after passing light through a prism. A second magnet deflects the electrons by 30 degrees in the opposite direction. Finally, magnetic lenses focus the beam so that the area struck by the electrons will be as small as possible. These systems of deflection, therefore, serve a double purpose: to separate electrons which possess the desired energy and to improve the qualities of the beam as it reaches the target. The electrons leave the tube through a thin aluminum window. They constitute a virtually parallel beam of less than 1 square centimeter in cross-section and with energy defined within 0.5% or better. These qualities are invaluable for the scientist. It is noteworthy that 10 million millions of particles strike the target every second. At the highest energy level, the deflection system is of greater complexity. But magnets are still the essential elements. This time, however, we find three identical magnets which divert the beam first to the right, to the left, and again to the right. The trajectory is normal at the entry and exit faces. Distances between the magnets are so chosen that the radial focus of each magnet is at the center of the following one. Thanks to this arrangement, the parallel entry beam is transformed into a parallel exit beam of the same dimensions, even though the electrons do not all have the same energy. The slits for analysis play the same role as in the other deviations. Finally, two magnetic lenses make it possible to focus the beam on a target placed at any point on the axis of deviation. The advantages of this system of deflection therefore include great flexibility in utilization associated with great ease of adjustment. The adjustments are all carried out by remote control from the central control room. Simultaneously, all the maneuvers are rigorously controlled. The adjustment of a high-energy accelerator must reckon with a large number of parameters. Some of these are independent of one another and can be adjusted at the outset of the run. Others, on the contrary, involve interrelated adjustments which must be carried out during the experiment. Television makes it possible to observe the geometry of the beam reaching the target in one of the experimental halls. There is one such hall for each experimental zone. This is the hall for the 250 mega electron volt experiments. As a rule, the target is very thin in order to avoid multiple collisions. Almost all of the electrons pass through the target without any collision. To count them, a secondary electron detector is interposed in their path. A tiny fraction of the electrons enter into collision with nuclei in the target. The electrons are then deflected, losing energy. Nuclei which have been struck recoil from the shock. In the case of hydrogen, protons may even be ejected from the target. The purpose is to observe only particles which are deflected at a particular angle and have a specific energy. The sorting is carried out with the aid of a spectrometer. The spectrometer in the 250 mega electron volt hall is equipped with a magnet whose field curves the particle trajectories through an angle of 180 degrees and introduces them into the counter. These trajectories have a radius of curvature which depends upon the energy of the particles. By modifying the field of the magnet, one can therefore alter the radius of curvature of the trajectories and thus count only the particles having the desired energy. The process of sorting in terms of energy is known as making a spectrum. the angle of emission is chosen by placement of the vertical plane of the spectrometer, which can be rotated about the target. In the target hall for the 500 mega electron volts beam, the equipment is similar. Here again, the great majority of the accelerated particles pass through the target without deviation. A secondary electron counter registers their passage. There is one particular installation, however. In this hall, there are two spectrometers. This arrangement makes a special study possible. Following a collision, two particles may emerge from the target. The electron, which collides with a nucleus, and a particle, usually a proton, which is knocked out of the nucleus. It is interesting to be able to detect both particles if we can be sure that they both emerged from the same collision. Through the use of an electronic device known as coincidence circuit, particles are counted only if they arrive simultaneously at the two counters. By simultaneously, we mean less than a millionth of a second apart. The two spectrometers can be disposed as we choose around the target. The target hall for the 1 billion electron volt beam has a few special features. The number of particles detected by the spectrometer is very small as compared with a great many other particles which cause a considerable background noise to which the counter is sensitive. To reduce this interference, the trajectory of the particles is curved downward. The counter can then be placed at the bottom of a concrete trench where the background noise is reduced. Its shielding is thus more effective. As in the preceding cases, this spectrometer directs toward the counter only the particles which are emitted from the target in the direction selected. It consists of three magnets. This makes it possible to count all the deflected particles, even if their energy differs slightly from the average fixed by the field of the spectrometer. This spectrometer can also be rotated around the target. It is remote controlled, and its positioning is automatically set with a tolerance of 3 seconds of arc. An elaborate system of protection is provided against radiation hazards. The target halls are covered by movable tanks filled with water. The whole accelerator installation is surrounded by a thick armor of earth and concrete. Once the beam has been established, the experiment is directed and controlled from the measurement chamber associated with each target hall. The physicist keeps tab on the current of the accelerator or adjusts the position and regulates the current of the spectrometer. He can also control the position of the target. It is in this room that the results of the experiment are recorded. The flow of electrons passing through the target is registered on an integrator linked to a voltmeter. In addition, counters associated with the spectrometers deliver voltage pulses, which are counted by scalars or analyzed by a pulse height analyzer known as a kick sorter. In the latter case, they are classified according to their pulse height. The counters provide crude results which often become the object of exceedingly complex calculations to determine their theoretical significance. These results are commonly presented in the form of spectra. Examinations already carried out have made it possible to obtain information about the electromagnetic structure of numerous atomic nuclei and their constituents, protons and neutrons. Spark chambers constitute another method for the detection of particles. The deflected particles emerging from the target in a given direction are channelized and are focused on the spark chambers. These permit visual observation of the trajectories of the particles. The sparks which follow the trajectories of the particles are photographed. Each photograph is analyzed. Among the various possibilities for utilizing electrons to which the accelerator has given high energy, we may note the use of storage rings and of collisions. This type of apparatus enables us to maintain the rotation of very high energy particles in a closed orbit. The particles revolve in a ring-shaped chamber in which a very high vacuum has been achieved with a pressure of 1/1,000,000,000 of a millimeter of mercury. Magnets curve the trajectories so that they are closed upon themselves, and magnetic lenses limit the amplitude of oscillation of the particles from the ideal orbit. The ring at the laboratory of the d'Orsay linear accelerator, shown here under construction, can store, on the one hand, high-energy electrons which revolve in one direction, and also their antiparticles, positrons, which turn in the opposite direction. This results in collisions at very high energies in which new particles may be created, such as muons, pi mesons, and K mesons. This collision ring has now been completed. It will permit the study of certain new phenomena from which we hope to gain fundamental information about the structure of matter. At the end of the accelerator, a new experimental hall has been set up. It provides enough room for the very large spectrometers required for the energies now being used. The d'Orsay linear accelerator is one example of the complexity and impressive dimensions of the instruments used in high-energy physics, instruments which are absolutely essential for understanding of the most intimate structure of matter.